Sai's Glory, His Divine Story, every Thursday on Morning Glory. Catch the vibe with me, Karuna Munshi, on Radio Sai's Thursday Live on Asia Stream at 9:40 a.m. Om Shri Sai Ram. Loving salutations at the lotus feet of Bhagwan Shri Satya Sai Baba, the voice, the ears, the heart and soul of Radio Sai. And Sai Ram to our global listeners. Welcome to Thursday Live. You are tuned to Radio Sai's Asia Stream, coming to you live from Prashanthi Nilayam, India, the spiritual capital of the universe. My name is Karuna and I will be hosting this segment called Morning Glory. On the sound console is audio engineer Brother Sunil. Thank you very much for staying with us on this beautiful Thursday, the 31st of October 2013. The time right now in Prashanthi Nilayam is 9:35 a.m. Today, I did start off 5 minutes sooner than usual because I have a wonderful program lined up for you and I just couldn't wait to get started. By the way, the current temperature in the ashram is an ideal 24 degrees Celsius. Last night's low was 22 Celsius and today we are expecting the daytime high of 30 degrees Celsius with clear sunny skies. Serving the ashram and all its allied institutions in Puttaparthi right now are the Sevadal volunteers from the Sri Satya Sai Seva organization of Tamil Nadu. And now it's time to announce the power-packed package I have lined up for you on Morning Glory today. At the bottom of the hour, a moving episode of Fleeting Moments Lasting Memories from our classics collection. Under the spotlight today is Ms. S.V. Vasumathi, an alumna of the Sai University's Anantapur campus. But before that, right here, right now, I have a fresh panel discussion that is a must-listen for every seeker, Sai devotee or not. Here is why. Have you ever wondered if there is an actual formula that can help us navigate through life with greater ease, poise and grace? Is the law of karma ironclad with no escape clause? Do the scriptures really contain a secret code that provides an invisible and invincible weapon for self-protection, for cutting the bonds of cause and consequence, for enhancing one's hidden talents and creativity, for overcoming individual phobias and shortcomings, for creating a sense of harmony in one's environment and changing the mindset of others as well as oneself? Today, three panelists from three continents, representing two generations, share their perspective on how they have hit the bull's eye by following Bhagwan Baba's call to chant the mother of all mantras. Possibly the most potent 24 syllables that can change one's emotional, mental and spiritual outlook and even alter one's destiny. Dear listeners, welcome to a Radio Sai special discussion on the Gayatri Mantra. A communication specialist from BBC India, an educator from Toronto, Canada, and a mental healthcare worker from Scotland, UK, joined me recently to explore the power of the sacred Gayatri Mantra. And personally for me, the exercise proved not only therapeutic, but also enlightening, as it confirmed the potency of the Gayatri Mantra that I knew of, but only intuitively. Here it is, dear listeners, for your listening pleasure, the panel discussion on Gayatri Mantra recorded on the 27th of October, 2013. So, Sai Ram, dear listeners, at Radio Sai, we are honored to have three guests with us who are going to talk to us about the Gayatri Mantra, and it's my pleasure to introduce them to you. We'll start with the Sai devotee from Scotland, UK, Ms. Angela Dixon. Angela has been a mental health care specialist in her country. She has extensive experience in counseling men and women as well as children in the field of spiritual exploration and empowerment. Currently, Angela Dixon and her husband reside in Puttaparthi, India, where they pursue their spiritual goals by following the teachings of their master, Bhagwan Sri Satya Sai Baba. Also joining us is Ms. Sai Amrita Kaul, a former student of the Sri Satya Sai Primary and Higher Secondary School here in Prashanthi Nilayam, where she studied from grades 6 to 12. Sai Amrita is currently a teacher in Toronto, Canada, where she is also an active member of the Sri Sathya Sai Baba Center of Toronto, York. Amrita has a diploma in Sri Sathya Sai Education and Human Values from the British Institute of Sathya Sai Education, a program that proved to be a turning point in her life and a program that she attended with Ms. Carol Alderman in the year 2006. Our third guest is Ms. Pradakshina Kaul, who works with the BBC's Charity and Development Wing in New Delhi, India. Pradakshina Kaul is a communications officer who focuses on social and behavior change communication. Pradakshina holds a master's degree in film and television studies from Amity University, New Delhi, and she uses her skills in mass media to bring about and to implement social and behavioral change in the areas of maternal and child health in Bihar, North India. Sairam, ladies, and welcome to Radio Sai.
Sairam.
It's a pleasure to have all three of you, and I'm looking forward, along with our listeners, to learning a lot about the Gayatri Mantra from three of you, all representing two different generations, different fields of walks of life, and different continents, North America, Europe, and Asia. It's wonderful to have you here. Now, let's start with the fundamental question. What is the source of the Gayatri Mantra?
Well, we know that the Gayatri Mantra originally appears in the Rig Veda, and it does appear pretty much in all four of the Vedas, so it's a very, very popular and a very important mantra historically within the history of Hinduism. Some refer to it as being the oldest mantra that was imparted within the Hindu tradition. And the important thing to note here, just a little bit of a brief bio about the Gayatri Mantra, mm-hmm. is that Gayatri itself is actually a meter. It just refers to a certain way that a mantra is chanted. There are many, so as many of us know, there are different kinds of Gayatris, including a Sai Gayatri, you know, Sai Shurai Vidmahi Satya Devaya Dimahi Tanna Sarva Prachodayat.
That's right.
So a regular Gayatri has three lines of, I think, eight syllables or something in each of them. This Gayatri Mantra is the Gayatri to the sun, to the Savitur, which the word appears within this Gayatri Mantra. And this is known to be the oldest one, or one of the first Gayatri Mantras that has ever appeared. And that's where it comes from. That's the brief history of the mantra in itself.
And Amrita, I remember reading somewhere that it was Sage Vishwamitra who gave it to humanity eventually.
Rishi Dadichi.
Dadichi? Actually, oh, yes. I stand corrected. Pradakshina, go ahead and tell us more about it.
Yes. So Rishi Dadichi gave the Gayatri Mantra as a part of his japa and all the japa and the tapas he did. The boon that he got was the Gayatri Mantra. Mm-hmm. We know that Dadichi has also given the strongest weapon of the world, universe and cosmos.
The Vajra.
The Vajra, yes. Mm-hmm. That is Indra's weapon. It is the invincible weapon. The spiritual counterpart of the Vajra is the Gayatri Mantra. That is the invincible mantra. So anything you do in any walk of life, if you take Gayatri Mantra along with it, you will be invincible.
Oh, that's good to know. And Angela Dixon, spiritually, what does the Gayatri Mantra do for us?
Spiritually, the Gayatri Mantra does everything for us. So many positive aspects spiritually to the Gayatri Mantra. One important one is, you know, Swami's teaching to love all, serve all. And lots of us struggle, you know, with loving all.
Yes.
By chanting the Gayatri Mantra, the Gayatri Mantra helps us to open up the heart chakra as never before, enabling us to love all and to serve all. Also, the Gayatri Mantra enables us to cleanse and energize all the chakras within our body. Chakras are the energy centers that run within our body. The Gayatri Mantra does all the clearing, does all the work. All we have to do is sincerely chant the Gayatri Mantra on a regular basis. Karuna, I could continue for some time.
Please,
on this.
Go okay? ahead, Angela.
You know, all of us as Sai devotees also are very keen to do meditation. But this monkey mind, as Swami called it, very often prevents us from achieving a pure meditative state. By chanting Gayatri Mantra, it strengthens the mind. It relaxes the mind. It purifies the mind and enables the individual to achieve that meditative state. So it's a very, very positive aspect of the Gayatri Mantra. Also, the ultimate goal of Gayatri, if we take it upon us as our sadhana, if we regularly chant Gayatri Mantra and allow it to work on us, it takes some time, but we achieve the ultimate goal, and that is merging with the Supreme Being, which is the goal of all humanity. Still, there are many positive aspects of Gayatri, but I think that is the ultimate goal.
I hear you, and I think at this point in time I'd like to quote something from late Pandit Sri Ram Sharma Acharya, who has very well summed up exactly what you have just said. And he says, and I quote late Pandit Sri Ram Sharma Acharya, he says, "Put together, very simply, Gayatri tells us that we meditate on that most adorable, desirable and enchanting luster and brilliance of our Supreme Being, our source energy, our collective consciousness, who is our creator, inspirer and source of eternal joy. May this warm and loving light inspire and guide our mind and open our hearts." And he goes on to say, "It is said that the sacred prayer spirals through the entire universe from the heart of the chanter, appealing for peace and divine wisdom for all. The Gayatri Mantra inspires wisdom in us. In very basic but beautiful language, it says, 'May the divine light of the Supreme Being illuminate our intellect to lead us along a path of righteousness.'" But this mantra does more, and he says, "It opens up our heart, just as you said, Angela, and how well we know both our mind and our heart are open. That's when we open ourselves for new possibilities."
I would also like to add that as per Bhagavad Gita, Narad Muni has said that chanting this mantra once a day eradicates all our sins committed during the course of day.
Oh.
If we chant it 10 times, it eradicates all the sins committed during the course of the day and night. If we chant it 100 times, it eradicates all the sins committed during the whole month. And if we chant it 10 million times, it will liberate us from the cycle of birth and death.
Makes it sound so easy. The purpose of life is to overcome the cycle of birth and death.
Yes.
Now, Asai Amrita and Pradakshina, you represent two young women in their 20s. You're both professional women. Have you incorporated the Gayatri in your lives?
Yes, we have. Every day, I start my day with Gayatri Mantra, and it gives me an energy that really helps me keep going on the day. And most of us think that, you know, we have very busy lives and we don't have time for things like spiritual practice. But something as simple as a Gayatri Mantra, it takes less than 10 minutes. And you can even do it when you're bathing, you know, like an abhishek. Yes, like an abhishek to the body, or while eating. And something, you know, we all find time to do social networking. Why not just take out some time for just chanting it?
Exactly. Even
I say amen to that. If if you spend 5 minutes less on Facebook or just texting and checking out things on Pinterest or what our friends are doing all over the world, who's posting new updates, we can easily focus a few minutes on the Gayatri. Sai Amrita, your perspective?
I definitely agree that the Gayatri Mantra is certainly not difficult. It's the wonderful thing about it is that it's very, very convenient. And personally, I find that it becomes a part of my moving meditation. It's one thing to sit down and meditate, and that does require a lot of consistency and it requires a lot of commitment. But for those of us who lead very busy lives, we have to try and find that meditation, those moments of meditation in our movement, in everything that we're doing. So whether that means when you're walking from your car through the parking lot into your building, while you're cleaning or washing dishes, whatever, while you're moving, if you constantly remain in a state of remembrance, if you're chanting or thinking of the mantra or meditating upon something, you also incorporate it into your body, into your movements. I remember when I was younger, I used to often chant Gayatri Mantra while walking up the stairs at school, and because we have several stairs in our school, and the girls, our dormitories were on the top floor. So every time I was climbing the stairs, I would chant the Gayatri Mantra, and then just out of habit, anytime I was anywhere else climbing stairs, automatically I would go straight to chanting the Gayatri Mantra. We create these little habits, we create these little pathways in our brains, and it's not hard to do. It's just one small thing to incorporate into your regular routine. And if I may also add here, the concept of, many of us may know, the concept of ajapa japa. Mm-hmm. It's a little bit unrelated, bit of a side note, but we see Lord Shiva, and he appears with a dhamaru in his head, a little drum that he can shake, and it constantly keeps going tap, 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 tap. It makes a funny little sound. And the significance of that instrument in his hand is that of ajapa japa, which is chanting all the time without even chanting. When he doesn't need to consciously think, or a person does not need to consciously think about what they are thinking about, because it is always on the mind. And if we can, whether we're doing that with the Gayatri Mantra or any mantra, we would strongly suggest the Gayatri, because it is a very, very powerful and potent mantra, which we'll speak about further. Just have it constantly going on underneath your breath, and it doesn't take very long to create that practice in ourselves for that to become very, very normal. At first, it may seem you have to remind yourself. Mm-hmm. Give yourself, I would say, 10 days, and it's already happening. Yeah.
Yeah. Talking of moving meditation, for me, Gayatri is the driving meditation, because driving in India is very challenging. So as soon as I start the car, just to keep myself safe and others safe on the road who are around me, I chant the Gayatri. So it also can be a driving meditation, as in my case.
Definitely mine too. It's I have a little counter that I bought, which I it fits on my finger like a ring, and I use that as my little counting japmala. Though there's really no need to keep counting, you know, like, you don't have an accounting relationship with God, but I try and keep count while I'm driving. So that's the other thing I do. Sometimes it helps me concentrate while I'm on the road, before I get lost in playing tabla on my steering wheel while singing bhajan. Sometimes it's better to just chant the Gayatri. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Now, Angela Dixon, who should chant the Gayatri? Who is eligible for it?
Everyone. Mm-hmm. Everyone is eligible to chant the Gayatri Mantra. Gayatri Mantra is a universal mantra. So there are no barriers to any human being at all in chanting the Gayatri Mantra.
And that's what Swami has told us.
Yes.
Repeatedly.
And from what I've read, and I haven't, you know, I can't quote every statement that Swami has ever made, but he has stated, "I wish that everyone chants the Gayatri Mantra," which I think is a very important statement for us all to take on board. And as you said, you know, all these positive things about chanting Gayatri, it also strengthens our well-being. Mm-hmm. You know, when there's so much misery in the world, and sometimes we get down and the mind is very, very heavy. Again, it's another positive aspect of chanting Gayatri. It lifts the heaviness, it lifts our miseries, it strengthens our bodies. And I'm going to turn the tables, mm-hmm. Karuna. Karuna, yourself have had a positive experience on your own health through chanting Gayatri Mantra.
Yes, indeed. I can absolutely with confidence vouch for that, because till about, let's say, 2.5 months ago, I had a lot of health issues, and I think I was quite a regular visitor to the Sri Satyasai General Hospital in the middle of the night, where I would go to the emergency with all kinds of difficulties that I was experiencing with my health, and, you know, get the nurses and the doctors knew of my condition, and they would administer the necessary injections and the shots, and I would spend a few hours there, come home, and then get on with my work. But it was getting very laborious. But ever since I started chanting the Gayatri and actually applying it to parts, directing the Gayatri, the power of the Gayatri Mantra, to specific parts of my body, and focusing my mind on those parts and visualizing the effulgence of the Gayatri penetrate through those parts of my body into the chakras involved, I have no other explanation for it, but I seem to have overcome all my aches and pains and all my health issues. I've never felt fitter, healthier, or more energetic than I do now since the last maybe 20 years. and all that I have done differently is to focus very religiously on my Gayatri practice for the last maybe 2.5 months or so.
So you are proof.
Yes, I am.
Of
absolutely
this work of the Gayatri Mantra.
Yeah, and I find the universe cooperates even better with me ever since I started chanting the Gayatri. Thoughts, I download thoughts straight from a very higher source, and as soon as I have a thought, I'm looking for help to translate it into action. People just walk into me and they offer help, or they are just the right person to seek guidance from. And I find there is so much of synchronicity. I've always chanted the Gayatri since my childhood, because Swami, when I was a student, Swami one time held a mass Upnayanam, and he made all of us, not just the boys who were being initiated into the sacred thread, but the entire Purnachandra auditorium, Swami had us all chant with him. So he initiated us into the Gayatri. But ever since I started chanting for my health by directing the mantra into specific chakras within my body and parts of my body, the outcome has been tremendous.
And I have been very privileged to witness this divine miracle strength power of the Gayatri time and time again, simply by advising people who come with pains and difficulty to chant that mantra, that special, powerful, wonderful mother mantra, the Gayatri, into their body. And Gayatri mantra, as well as being a mantra, is also a prayer. And sometimes we forget to pray to the Gayatri for a specific condition before we chant. In praying to Gayatri for a specific condition, then chanting the mantra, very often that condition, difficult, painful, miserable condition, is eased almost instantly by chanting Gayatri mantra.
At this point in time, I'd really like to quote Pandit Sri Ram Sharma Acharya once again, because he has summed up what I want to express, but perhaps I lack the perfect words. And he says, "The sages of ancient times selected the words of the Gayatri carefully and arranged them so that they not only convey meaning but also create very specific vibrations and powers of righteous wisdom through their utterances." Now he goes on to say something else which I think is very beautiful and captures what many of us have experienced with the Gayatri. He says, "The rishis and sages of the Vedic age had experienced and experimented on the enormous extrasensory energy pools, the chakras, the upachakras, granthis, koshas, matakas, and nadis, which are hidden in the subtle cores in the endocrine glands, nerve bundles, and ganglions. It is said that the activation of these rekindles rare virtuous talents and supernormal potential. Scientists, metaphysicists, spiritual practitioners and others are studying and rediscovering these ancient approaches towards self-realization. The secret of the supernatural impact of Gayatri Mantra in the physical domains of life lies in the unique configuration of the specific syllables of the mantra. The cyclical enunciation of this mantra stimulates the subliminal power centers in the subtle body. The pressure on tongue, lips, vocal cord, palate, and the connecting regions are in the brain generated by continuous enunciation of the 24 special syllables of the Gayatri Mantra creates a resonance or a vibration in the nerves and the threads of the subtle body. The musical flow thus induced titillates the extrasensory energy centers. The latter begin to stimulate a sublime magnetic force, and they arouse in the sadhaka the vital currents of Gayatri Shakti imminent in the infinite domains. This magnetic charge induced by the continuous repetition of the Gayatri Mantra attunes the seeker's mind to links with these supernatural power currents." Unquote. I really thought this pretty much talked about how our minds become sharper, our immune system becomes stronger, and our hearts open when we chant the Gayatri by creating this vibration.
I would certainly agree in that I feel that, or the analogy is often used, that the Gayatri Mantra is like sunshine for your soul. The prayer in its, as Angela was mentioning, it is a mantra, but it is also a prayer. asking for illumination, asking to help illuminate our mind, asking that we also become as effulgent as that brilliant one. And it really is like sunshine for the soul. And the way I see it is, especially like what you were referring to with regards to your health or anything really, sometimes if we chant the Gayatri Mantra with an intention, if we chant it with a certain
intention and integrity both.
Integrity of intention, you can consider your intention to be a seed, which then the Gayatri Mantra provides the sunshine for it to grow. And if our consciousness is really the bed within which we are planting things, the Gayatri Mantra is the sunshine. It is the source of life for everything that we set our intention for. And so sometimes that can be the intention of healing. That can be the intention of clearing. And I've also used it because there are many times where I feel almost helpless when I hear of another person's condition, and I set my intention to be for whatever is good should happen, and I chant the Gayatri Mantra for that person or for that situation and that place. So really the Gayatri Mantra is like, it is the food for whatever we want to set as our intention.
Yes, even for the self, you know, we deal with daily stresses, but we also have to keep our soul's need in mind.
Mm-hmm.
While money can probably get us physical comfort, but Gayatri brings to us is physical, mental, spiritual comfort, and it can really make you agile and take care of both your physical and spiritual well-being.
Exactly, and I think Swami has said something very similar, which I would really like to quote. Swami said, supplying the calories for the spirit is as necessary a process for happy living as supplying calories for the body. Breakfast, lunch and dinner, morning worship, noon worship, evening worship, all six are equally essential. You miss any one of the six, you're at your peril. So as you said, money is only going to take you so far by fulfilling your physical needs.
Yes.
But for your soul, for your mind to nurture the rest, your entire personality, you need to include Gayatri. And Swami also said, do not sing cheap and defiling film songs. Instead, recite the Gayatri Mantra. When you bathe, the body is being cleansed. Let your mind and intellect also be cleansed. Make it a point to repeat it when you bathe as well as before every meal, because the meal becomes prasadam. When you wake up, when you go to bed, every time, and also repeat Shanti three times at the end to give peace to the three entities within you, your body, your mind and your soul. So beautiful.
Indeed.
Pradakshina, anything else you'd like to add?
Yes, I also feel that Gayatri Mantra also provides you with a layer of protection. You know, I live in Delhi and Delhi has been in headlines.
Yes. And it concerns all of us to read about the dangers young women face in the national capital of India.
Absolutely. And you know, I chant Gayatri every day. And I feel it gives me like a protection, like an invisible weapon in my hand. Gayatri Mantra gives me, or anybody can give anybody, that protection that can protect them from anything that is dangerous. It is like our Vajra in our hands. So I would suggest every woman, wherever they are, to chant Gayatri and then only move out of the house. It will give them protection, the kind of comfort that they want always with them. Gayatri Mantra creates a force field within your aura, so nobody can violate it. And you're safe, you're sound within your auric field.
Very well.
Nobody
said.
Is crossing that.
Excellent. Angela? Years of experience, do you concur with Pradakshina Kaur?
Yes. 19-20 years ago, when I was given the Gayatri Mantra, I had no idea of its power, of its effulgence. I chanted Gayatri Mantra to begin with in complete ignorance. So I'm sure I didn't fully benefit of the power, but still benefited. So as you so rightly said, Pradakshina, it gives the greatest of protection. But at this point in time, many human beings throughout the world, we're all praying for help for humanity, to change the negative aspects of humanity, to change the aggressiveness, to change the greed, all the negative aspects. By getting together family and friends, as well as benefiting the self and all these many ways that we have spoken about, we can actually be part of the effulgence of Gayatri and benefit the entire human race and all other beings by chanting Gayatri together. On Saturday just past, many Sai devotees got together, I believe, in 45 countries and chanted global chanting of the Gayatri mantra. And, you know, I'm sure the effulgence, the light of that chanting affected every human being in a positive way. So, we also have a duty, as well as to the self, to all others. And if we gather family and friends and work colleagues, get together and chant Gayatri regularly for the sole purpose of helping all globally, again, I'm sure we can bring about a really positive change in our world in many, many levels.
And I guess when we do it as a group activity, the impact just grows exponentially.
Yes.
As opposed to just doing it individually.
Yes.
And I just want to also remind all of us that what Swami has said, that Gayatri can be listened to, chanted, or even just thought about or contemplated upon. There is power and potency in all three approaches. Choose the approach that you're most comfortable with. So you can think about it, you can listen to it, you can, if somebody's ailing, we can just play it on a mantra box or just loop it on Radio Sai's website. We have loopable Baba Teaches Gayatri. So play for that person. It just, Swami, I read somewhere Swami said that just playing the Gayatri mantra or chanting it together, what we do, it's like if your body has an infection and you're fighting an infection, you use an antibiotic or an antiseptic. Similarly, if the environment around you is negative or very unpleasant and there's dark energy around you and you're not happy in a situation, there's health issues, just chanting or playing the Gayatri mantra can actually act to combat all the negativity, to fight it out, to eliminate that infection from the environment and clear it all up. Sai Amrita?
One thing that I find very interesting about the Gayatri mantra is that it is symbolized by a woman. We have the goddess Gayatri, who is a representative of the Gayatri mantra, who represents the Gayatri mantra.
Yes.
And that is also in part for many reasons, right? And we refer to, the way we speak of the Gayatri mantra is that it is a mantra of love. Like it is a mantra that gives us a sense of safety, a sense of security. And really it's also referred to as being the mother of the Vedas. And so the Gayatri mantra really is a loving mother. It is a mantra that is there to nurture us. It is a mantra that is there to protect us, that provides us with whatever we need. And of course there's many reasons that the Gayatri Devi herself is represented in certain ways. She is seen to have five heads, which I guess would be 10 sets of eyes looking in all the various directions. And the number five also represents the elements, and it represents the various races on the planet. She represents, she signifies all kinds of learning. She represents wealth. She represents understanding. So, from another standpoint as well, if you were to take this mantra and personify it, it is really, it is a loving mother whom you can entrust every thought, every desire that you have, and know that she will take it from there and she will carry it out as she sees best. So the mantra is not just a set of words. Feel free to create that association with it and have a true relationship with it, not just as a sound, but as something that actually touches you and moves you and is a part of your regular daily life.
Very well said. And there are so many ways to understand the meaning of the Gayatri mantra, because people like to break it in by word and say. And in one point in time, Swami just demystified it and said, at the end of the day, if you can say no prayer, but just say the Gayatri mantra, you're fine, because in it lies the sum total of every prayer, every aspiration of the human soul. And he also said in a very simplistic, simple way to understand it, try to remind yourself that when you're chanting the Gayatri, you're asking the Supreme Divine Mother to fill our thoughts, our words and our actions with divine love. Period. That's all. So simple. Instead of saying, may the light of the effulgence of the million suns illumine my intellect and thereby fill me with the wisdom all that he has simplified and said, just pray to the Supreme Divine Mother to fill our thoughts, words and deeds with her divine love. So whatever we do is suffused with divine love, not selfishness, not personal motive, not worldly love or any self-interest.
That's really all there is to it.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
I would really suggest all listeners to do the Gayatri Mantra. And once they do it, they'll personally feel the kind of vibrations it has and the kind of divine grace you get from it. So I would really suggest, strongly recommend it, practice it for 10 days and see the difference.
Mm-hmm. And so maybe just to try it, set an intention. Set your intention that when you chant the mantra, that you want to feel the mantra. That's it. Just set the intention that when I want to chant this mantra and I want to truly feel its effects within my body, within my life. And then allow yourself to be open to how this may happen and how it may appear within your life.
So as young women who practice the Gayatri, you're recommending it to many others who are listening to Radio Sai right now. Sai Amrita Call and Pradakshina Call, how has the practice of Gayatri benefited you?
See, as I mentioned that I live in Delhi. And
that's enough. You need special survival skills. Okay.
Yes. And I chant this every day and I know I'm protected and nothing can ever happen. I work in a development sector. I go to areas that people generally don't go to.
Yeah, I go to remote villages in Bihar.
Absolutely. I go to Naxalite areas. I go to Naxal families and talk to them. And talk to them about things that maybe they're not comfortable with. But I've had a wonderful experience with everything. People come to me and ask me that don't you feel like in danger? Don't you feel that you'll be harmed in any way? I have never ever even felt in that direction. Forget about anything happening to me. And I think that is because I have this protection, Gayatri protection with me. And all the women, everywhere I go, I'm surrounded by women and they're talking to me about their problems or their conveniences. And moving towards a goal that we have set, my project has set, better health. Because of the Gayatri, I strongly feel, because I chant this mantra every day, I have protection, everything falls into the place. Naxal women, tribal women, everybody comes to me and talk about things like, you know, family planning in rural areas is a controversial topic.
Yes. Culturally, they're very sensitive. You can't talk to them about planning their families. But now that, Pradakshina, you have the opportunity to educate them in neonatal health, prenatal health, maternal health, maybe you should also talk to them about spiritual health and
yes.
Encourage those women to chant more Gayatri. It will really help them.
Sure, I'll definitely try and do that.
After this interview, that is your task from Swami. Wherever you go, tell them it's nothing to do with any particular religion or race, but maybe it's just a universal prayer that will help them to feel more secure and make better choices and make better decisions.
Yes, I'll try and do that.
Sai Amrita?
Personally, I often chant the Gayatri to clear my mind. I find if I'm very tired after a day at work or after, sometimes even when you're just working with people or having conversations about certain things, and I sometimes feel like my mind is just very full and I want to clear it out. The Gayatri Mantra, specifically, if I may add, the version that we have here of Swami chanting and then where we're allowed to repeat, that I listen to very often just to calm myself down and to clear out my headspace. That's really the primary function I use it for most of the time. The rest of the time, it's an active thing that's going on all the time. But when I listen to the mantra specifically, it's often just so that I can allow myself to be centered again. Because there are times where, you know, when you're not at your best, you're more likely to not react that well with people around you, and it's likely to affect everything else around you. So I try to use the Gayatri Mantra just to make sure that I can be calm and centered in with myself and in my interactions with everyone around me as well.
It also wards off all negative energies. When you're in office, you know, you often have politics going on, you have ego clashes and all sorts of things happening around you. When you sit on your desk and you chant the Gayatri, none of that impacts you in any way.
Very good survival skill. Excellent. From the girl from Delhi. Yes, indeed. Angela Dixon?
Whoa. Om Sai Ram. Gayatri Mantra for myself, from darkness to light. What more can I say? And through the privilege, through the grace of Swami giving me this Gayatri Mantra, now when many other souls come, both men and women, I pass the Gayatri Mantra on and I watch with a great deal of love the transformation in many other souls. We have all been in a dark space. We've all prayed. We've all been lost. We've all suffered pain. We all wonder, how can we get ourselves out? How can we lift ourselves up through chanting Gayatri Mantra with sincerity and from the heart?
Okay. Is there a specific place one should chant? Is it necessary to sit in front of your altar or in a temple or any place else? Where can one possibly chant? We talked about while having a shower if you're in a rush and before eating a meal so the food is purified. Where else? And driving? And walking, I guess?
Everywhere.
Yes. There's no specific spot that one needs to confine this to. No.
Absolutely.
And is it... Initially, like thousands of years ago, it was limited to the Brahminical tradition and it was only passed from a guru to a disciple. But now Swami has opened it. It's open sesame. Men, women, children of all races, all cultures, all classes. And everybody is benefiting from it.
With regards to when it should be chanted and how, I would refer back to really what I remember Swami saying, which is that, you know, God is as close to you as you are close to God.
Mm-hmm.
So really, whatever your relationship is with your spiritual practice, let that determine where and when and how you want to chant the mantra. If I may say so, my relationship with Swami and my relationship with spirituality is pretty informal in that I don't have a specific time for my spiritual practice. My practice is every day, all the time. So that means that this is happening, and I'm carrying it on with me wherever I go. Sometimes I do choose to set aside a small portion of time so that for my own personal benefit, because I feel like I need to sit down and allocate, you know, an hour just to meditate or just to calm my mind and do a certain practice. But I would definitely encourage all of our listeners, as I'm sure they're well aware, that, you know, Swami is with you all the time. The universe is constantly listening and responding. So don't ever feel like you have to schedule an appointment or like you have to schedule a date and time to do something like this, because it's open 24/7. And also, if I may add, just in terms, with regards to this, your spiritual progress, right? Because I think we often start out with a practice. We start out with the mantra so that we can see a material benefit, and then from there we realize its benefit, and then we go on to the next stage and we realize how it affects us spiritually, emotionally, etc. You know, like I've heard that the Gayatri Mantra is kind of like the equivalent of if you have to clean a carpet, knowing exactly the right spot to hold the carpet and dust it so that you can get it cleaned in one move.
Yeah.
That's what the Gayatri Mantra is. It's just, it's that perfect spot where you can get, with one swift movement, you can achieve maximum results.
Very nice
and,
analogy.
That's what the Gayatri Mantra is like for your soul. It's what the Gayatri Mantra is like for your mind. And if you do it with that intention, it'll surely have that result. You just have to put it into practice somehow or the other in your life. So the Gayatri Mantra, we've been talking a lot about how we chant the Gayatri on an individual level, and then Angela was also talking about chanting it on a global level where people get together, and many of us have participated in these, obviously, where sometimes either groups send around big emails around the world so that we can keep someone or the other is constantly chanting the Gayatri for 24 hours, so you choose time slots, or we have an allocated time, and at that very same time around the world, people are chanting the Gayatri Mantra. And this is fantastic. This is so important, not just for us, but also for us it's great because we feel like we're able to do something. And on a much larger scale, it gives us the sense that we're able to spread that energy further, not just to us, not just to the room that we are in, the house that we're in, the building that we're in, but it goes much, much farther. Because if you look into the words of the Gayatri Mantra, if we look into the meaning of the Gayatri Mantra, so earlier I had mentioned that the Gayatri itself is a meter. It's just a certain way to chant the mantra, to chant a mantra, and that it has 8 syllables in every three lines. So the Gayatri Mantra that we're referring to here, it starts with a line which goes Om Bhur Bhuvah Svaha. And Om, I'm sure we all understand, is a very, very potent mantra in and of itself. Bhur, Bhuvaha, and Svaha refer to the earth, to the sky, and to space, or to the sun plane, right? So this Gayatri Mantra that we chant is the slightly shorter version. There is a longer version as well.
You can go ahead and share that with our listeners.
Well, the longer version of the Gayatri Mantra is Om Bhur, Om Bhuvaha, Om Svaha, Om Maha, Om Janaha, Om Tapaha, Om Satyam, Om Tat Savitur Varenyam, Bhargo Devasya Dhimahi, Dhiyo Yo Nah Prachodayat. So that is the longer version of the Gayatri Mantra. And really, between the two, there's not a huge difference, other than the fact that the shorter version, when we refer to Bhur, Bhuvah, and Svaha, we're referring to the earth, to the sky, and to space. So we are not just asking for that illumination for ourselves. We're referring to it to be spread further and further. We're asking for the multiplier effect. The longer version then refers to various other planes as well. Mm. And, you know, maybe if we move into, you know, decide to become physicists and go into string theory, or if we decide to understand the various different planes of existence, I think then at that level, it's certainly a good idea to explore the longer version of the Gayatri Mantra. But for now, what we're chanting is very good. And I don't think the mantra is a little bit foolproof in that it doesn't allow you to be selfish, because by chanting it, you're automatically asking for the benefit and welfare
of everyone,
something much, much larger
than yourself. Of the universe, not only the human race or our planet. And that's what Swami said, without quite consciously recognizing that fact. Every time we chant the Gayatri, even with the intent of, let's say, personal healing, we are praying to the universal power to bless the entire universe.
Yes.
What a blessing it is. What a multiplier effect it has.
And when you think about that and pay attention to how large scale and how grand the mantra is, it does give you goosebumps, because you realize it is very humbling. You realize that really I'm part of something so large. And just in asking for myself, I'm asking for everybody. In asking for everybody, I'm asking for myself. But you do feel like you're part of something, and you feel like you're part of a community. So the Gayatri Mantra is, as I said earlier, it really is, it is a loving mother. She is our mother, and we are all her children. So have that faith, have that trust, establish that relationship with the mantra, because it is not just words.
And it constantly reinforces their sense of interconnectivity with everything around us. None of us can live in isolation in our own little bubbles.
Absolutely.
Yes. Pradakshina call?
I would just like to add that Gayatri Mantra really takes care of your mind and your soul. You don't have any fear from anything. And success in any aspect of life, whatever it may be, will be assured with this mantra, because it is a mother. You know, mother does not really look into just spiritual aspect or physical aspect or one aspect. It is a mother. It will take care of everything. Just chant the mantra, surrender to the mantra, and life is good.
I agree. Angela Dixon?
Yes, I agree. You know, what more can we say? You know, by chanting the mantra, it does everything for ourselves, for the universe, for all beings. What more can we say? Just a little bit of information. All the great sages, the wise swamis, etc., there were asking people to chant the Gayatri Mantra. They were instructing all the people there to chant the Gayatri Mantra to bring about transformation, positive transformation in our world. The Gayatri Mantra. You know? And Swami has repeatedly encouraged us to chant the Gayatri Mantra. And may I add a quote in the Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna proclaimed among all the mantras, I am the Gayatri. So throughout the ages, we have been consistently told to chant the Gayatri Mantra. So I think we really have to take up this divine instruction, chant Gayatri Mantra, And beloved listeners, please, for your own sake and the sake of all humanity and the universe, let's start chanting the Gayatri Mantra. Sai Ram.
It is the best insurance policy, the best investment in a mutual fund you want to ever have. Because Swami said once we chant the Gayatri and we surrender to her and trust her completely, she bestows upon us talents we did not know we had. It brings out our potential, our infinite potential that we never imagined existed. It and takes care of all our physical needs. I have never met any person who chants the Gayatri and lacks anything. You will never lack anything when we chant the Gayatri. Everything is provided. Our path is made simpler. Our obstacles move out on their own without our quite even knowing, being aware of their existence. So life really becomes very smooth and one can more easily adapt or surrender to being an instrument in the divine hand once we incorporate Gayatri as a lifelong practice. Not only for ourselves, but our families, our communities, our Sai centers, our groups of friends. And Swami said this formula of sacred words, the sequence of sacred words, is not limited to people of any one particular faith. Your final thoughts, ladies? We'll start with Sai Amrita.
Just chant the Gayatri Mantra. No excuses.
And if I may add, do it with love and do it with faith. Pradakshina call.
After this interview, I'm so inspired. I think I'm going to be doing Gayatri Mala morning, afternoon, evening, and in between.
Very good. And I think the BBC's developmental program will have experience a quantum jump and things will get even better than they already are.
Most definitely.
Angela Dixon?
Yes. Thank you, ladies. I have so enjoyed being here and sharing this wonderful talk regarding Gayatri Mantra. I hope also the love that has gathered in and around us all will reach out and touch each and every listener in their hearts. Be inspired to chant the Gayatri. Be inspired to share it with many others, especially those who are lost and sick and suffering. Jai Sai Ram.
Sai Ram. And let's conclude this discussion by chanting the Gayatri with Bhagwan himself. And as we do that, let us request our listeners to join in. Sai Ram.
Sai Ram.
Bharko devasya dhimahi Diyo yona chodaya
Sai Ram and welcome back. You just heard a panel discussion on the significance and potency of the Gayatri Mantra with panelists Angela Dixon, who is a mental health care worker from Scotland, Pradakshina Kaul, a communications specialist from BBC India, and Sai Amrita Kaul, an educator from Toronto, Canada. This discussion was recorded on October the 27, 2013, here at the Radio Sai Studio in Prashanthinilayam. Dear listeners, your feedback is most important to us because we try to reach our beloved Bhagwan through you. So please email us your thoughts on this topic and the discussion you just heard. The email ID to reach us at is listener@radiosai.org. I repeat, listener radiosai.org. Now, before we go any further, here is some wonderful news we'd like to share with all our listeners around the world. The first anniversary of Radio Sai's digital studios at Shivam in Hyderabad falls on November the 4th. So on November 3rd, which happens to be Diwali Day and a Sunday, for the first time ever, we will air live for 3 continuous hours from Hyderabad, from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. on Radio Sai's Telugu stream, and we invite you to tune in and join us. The studio at Shivam in Hyderabad is one of Radio Sai's satellite studios in that city producing Radio Sai Telugu programs. So please do join us on Sunday, November the 3rd for a live broadcast from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. Now moving along, you're tuned to Morning Glory coming to you live from Prashanthi Nilayam, India, and today is the 31st of October. The time right now in our studios is 10:30 a.m. It is now time for me to play for you a Fleeting Moments, Lasting Memories interview with Ms. S.V. Vasumathi, an alumna of Baba's Anantapur College. This Sai University graduate took her Divine Chancellor as a role model and decided to walk in his footsteps. Upon graduating, instead of chasing a lucrative career, marriage or family life, S.V. Vasumathi decided to dedicate her life, her energy, talent, time, her everything to pioneer a silent revolution in a troubled community outside the city of Chennai. Her story is truly uplifting. This interview comes from a classics collection of Fleeting Moments, Lasting Memories. Now, before I leave you to listen to Vasumathi's interview, let me remind you of how eagerly we look forward to your feedback to all our programs. So please, do take a moment and email us your thoughts on this interview with Ms. Vasumathi as well as the Gayatri Mantra panel discussion you just heard. Our email ID remains listener@radiosai.org. Till we meet next Thursday, please be well, keep seeking, and do whatever it takes to stay happy and positive. And most importantly, whenever you have a moment, remember to chant the Gayatri Mantra with love and faith. It could be anywhere, in the shower, while having your meal, while traveling in the bus or driving or just walking to your workplace or between your car and in the parking lot and the building that you're approaching. Over now to Ms. S.V. Vasumathi, an alumna of the Sai University's Anantapur campus. Sai Ram. Sai Ram, dear listeners, welcome back to Fleeting Moments, Lasting Memories, our weekly series where students of Sai schools and colleges share their experiences with our listeners. Sai Ram, dear listeners, Ms. S.V. Vasumathi is our guest today. Ms. Vasumathi attended the Sai University's Anantapur campus from 1989 to 1994, completing her Bachelor of Arts and her Master's degree in Philosophy. Her student days cemented her relationship with Bhagwan Baba as someone far more than just the chancellor of her alma mater. Like Sai students everywhere, Vasumathi quickly realized that Bhagwan is not only the architect of her destiny and her supreme benefactor, but also the most loving parent and the ultimate role model that ever can be. Inspired by Bhagwan's commitment to values-based education, Vasumathi and her older sister and fellow alumna from Anantapur, Ms. S.V. Mala, consciously decided to dedicate their lives to the same cause, even though with the humble beginning. The sisters decided to take the divine love and light of Bhagwan Baba's philosophy of educare to a neglected, forgotten, and dangerous village in rural Tamil Nadu. Mala and Vasumathi took values education to a community that had the dubious distinction of churning out more goons and criminals per household than the national average. In the process, they set up a school that replicated the values education they had received at Bhagwan's lotus feet. The Sri Vishwavidyalaya Matriculation Higher Secondary School in the village of Otteri near Chennai in South India lovingly embraced the downtrodden children, recreating them as model citizens. Today, Ms. Vasumati, who serves the school as its vice principal, shares her experiences with our listeners. Her account highlights the power of pure intent and the transformation that the vast but absolutely silent love revolution generated by the supreme teacher to humanity, Bhagwan Baba, is bearing upon the neediest of the world's forgotten children. Sai Ram Vasumati, and welcome to Radio Sai.
Sai Ram, sister.
I understand, Vasumati, you were born in a family of Sai devotees.
Yes. My father, my uncle came to Puttaparthi during the 1960s. And even before I was born, our family was into the Sai fold. And I had the fortune of being born in a Sai family and being brought up the Sai way. I was a Balvika student. Then it was my aim to join the Satya Sai University. And my mother was very particular that I wouldn't do my college education elsewhere. And it was Swami's great blessing that I got the opportunity to join the Anandpur campus. And I studied there for 5 years.
But you were not the only one. I understand your sisters also studied in Anandpur.
Yes. My elder sister, S.V. Mala, she did her BCom course between the years 1983 to 1986. She was the one who joined the institute first, and I joined in 1989. And then my elder sister did her B.Ed. for 1 year. And she also got the gold medal from Swami.
That's very nice. What do you recall the most about your experience at Anandpur? How did it influence you? What was it like?
When I entered the Anandpur campus, I was like a raw clay. And it was Swami's grace that molded us to what we are now. Just as any other child who would educate from any other school we were, of course we had the Sai background, but during this 5 years, we never realized what Swami had done to us. Silently, he was transforming us. And by the time I joined the institute, my sister had already started a school in the village. Swami had guided us and asked us, motivated us to start a school in the village. And he prepared me. Before joining the institute, I don't think I had the mental makeup. I was not equipped to run a school or to do service of this magnitude, but Swami's love transformed and made me grow into what I am today. There are many instances, if I could say one
yes,
or two.
Please.
We had so many activities in our house, like we used to take part in medical camps. We used to do the village adoption program. But Swami gave us the guidance in one of the interviews. When the Anandpur students went for an interview, Swami in that stressed the need for the principal or the leader of a particular group to be the ideal or the role model. He said that the principal is like the reservoir or the tank. And the water that comes out of the tap depends so much on the water that is there in the reservoir. So he said the principal or the head of any institution should be pure. Only then the students who are like the water coming out of the tap will be really good. He was stressing on that. So I thought that when I go back and serve, when I join my sisters in this service activity, I also should equip myself and make myself worthy enough. So this was one thing. And later on when I did the security duty once, there was a group next to me. And I had to control them, and many of them were taking Pad Namaskar. One particular lady just took one more step ahead and she was trying to touch Swami's feet, and I was trying to control her. Swami looked at me and said, "Teacher." Then I just paused. To me personally, it meant that Swami also wanted to give that lady an extra blessing. And he was also telling me that you are a teacher, so conduct yourself accordingly. So I took it that way. Both ways it meant to me. So being a teacher was something which was very special to me. Swami molded me that way.
So what did you make of Swami's instruction, "Teacher"? I didn't follow that very well.
Swami looked into my eyes when I was trying to control the lady from taking Pada Namaskar. Swami said that she is a teacher. He didn't tell she is a teacher. He looked into my eyes and said, "Teacher." Uh-huh. That stopped me from controlling her. Then later on I went and started ruminating over it. I realized that Swami did not want me to stop that lady. He wanted to give her the extra blessing.
Because she was the teacher?
Maybe. I didn't find out, but this is the message that I took. Then one step ahead I went and I thought that Swami was wanting me to behave as a teacher. You are a teacher, so conduct yourself accordingly.
So be a role model.
Be a role model. Mm-hmm. So I took it that way.
I see.
These two instances really gave me a lead to what I have to be. And Swami motivated me in this way.
I see. I understand a turning point in your life came basically 1986, because that's when your sister S.V. Mala was graduating, and her graduating class from Anandpur had an interview with Bhagwan.
Yes. In that particular interview, Swami was very kind enough to give guidance to all the girls who were passing out of the institution. And one particular statement of Bhagwan really made a deep impact on all of us. He just put his hand forward and he said that, "I do not want my students to carry begging bowls and go and search for jobs. My students should be job providers. Let them not go and beg for jobs and work under people. And the most important thing is, I want my students to go to the village and serve. This is something which is very precious to me, and I want you all to take it up." So this sentence of Bhagwan really motivated all of us, and that is how we took up this. And that became a turning point for our entire family. We shifted our house from where we were staying. Which is a place called Tambaram.
In Chennai.
In Chennai. Mm-hmm. But it is a little better area than where we are staying currently. So we shifted to the village where our school is supposed to be started.
Oteri
Extension. We had to stay in a single room. There was no house in that place because it was very backward at that time. There was only one house which had a single room. From a house which we had quite a few facilities back home, but we shifted to that village. We stayed there. We started our classes with hygiene, health. We went to the parents. We spoke to them about the need of educating the children. Otherwise, child labor was present in that village. Children were sent to make matchsticks or pluck flowers. So we had to educate the parents, then the children. And for all this, I think Swami's words was the thing that motivated us throughout. Because Swami specifically mentioned, "I want you to go to the village and serve." Mm-hmm. What more can be inspiring than Bhagwan's own statement?
Mm-hmm. I understand when you initially started this project in an economically backward area, which was supposed to be the hub of criminals, because
yes,
it was churning out more criminals than school graduates.
Yes.
There were a lot of challenges initially, especially because there was no road, no access.
Yes.
Tell us about those early days.
Early days, Swami equipped us with a lot of inner strength and physical strength, because we had 54 students at that time.
Mm-hmm.
And none of the parents were educated or were having the inclination to send the children to school. If at all they were willing to send them only till 5th standard. They did not want to educate them more. And in a place like that, we were staying in the 3rd street, and from the 8th street onwards, there were people who were involved in criminal activities. And it was Bhagwan's name. They could not pronounce the name of the school. Sai Baba school was easier for them to say. That is how they would refer our school. And anything, we were just girls. My father was not keeping well. So father was a moral support to us. It was just 3 girls running the school. So it was really dangerous, and it was Swami's protective hand that helped us. There were people who were trying to take things from us. There were people who were trying to cheat us. But Bhagwan in his own ways showed that he was protecting us. And in a way, they were scared to even come to the school. Swami made them feel in different ways that they cannot touch the school because it is his property. They would say that nothing can be done to the school because it is Sai Baba's school. So we have to keep away. But initially, of course, there were some political problems. There were children from rival groups studying in our school. And the children carried home the message to their parents that they have to be united. There were children in the same class who belonged to 2 rival groups. One of the parents had killed the other one. With the help of some gundas or others, they had even tried to murder, but the children were together. And later on, these fights ceased because the children were together and they spread the message at home.
Mm-hmm.
So this was possible.
So this positive trickle-down impact that you've had over the years has really transformed that community completely. The school is totally changed now. Tell us about the reality right now in your school. How big is it? How many students do you have?
I should also mention one thing. Like when we were about to start the 6th standard, we were really in a dilemma. Like because once we start the high school or the higher secondary, we have to provide a lot of infrastructure, and that involves capital expenditure. So we came to Bhagwan asking him for guidance. And at that time Swami did not speak to us. He would look at us from a distance, and we had to stay for a week and we had to go back. The day we went back to our village, my sister got a dream, in which Swami showed all the buildings that were there in Puttaparthi, and he said, "I did not have the money to build all this. Do you think I had the money? Why do you worry about money? You do not worry. You carry on your service activities." Swami never told us in person, but it was a dream. We took that as a reality and we pursued and we continued. Now we are having a strength of 1,200 students. It is Sai atmosphere everywhere in the school now. Right from the teachers to the students, it is like a temple of learning, really. Everybody can feel the presence of Bhagwan. And every Thursday we have bhajans. And children, it is a festive atmosphere. Just about 100 students have come to Puttaparthi and they have seen Swami in person. But the rest, Swami has touched them somehow. And they live with the belief that Swami is there. So that is one thing. And with Swami's grace, in all aspects, though they are from the rural area, whether it is academics or Veda or music, our children have been doing excellently well. We got many state ranks, national awards in music and other things. And it is all because of Swami's grace.
And which is very gratifying to know. However, during this journey to get here, there must have been a lot of times when you faced a lot of obstacles, such as you were short of capital. Were there times when you wanted to give up?
Definitely. 2-3 times we even approached Swami, we wanted to give him a letter and say, and those were the times my elder sister was working in Ooty that time, and now she is working in primary school. Once in an interview, Swami said, how many students are there in Ooty? He would ask. There were around 300 students then. Same number was there in even our school. Swami said, 350 students are there in Ooty? How many are there in Oteri? He would ask. Almost tentatively the same number. Then he would say, see, there also 350, here also 350. Both are my schools. So you have to continue this work. That was once. And another time when we wanted to start the higher secondary, again we wanted to stop, we wanted to hand over.
Hand over to the state government?
State trust. Or there were other people who were willing to take up this project. Because by then, to an extent, the school was established. So we wanted to tell Swami, Swami, we wrote a letter, Swami, we would come to Puttaparthi, we would settle down and we would do. Then Swami said, no, that is also my school. I want you to go and work there. You cannot close down. How about the village children? They are my children. You have to take care. So these motivating words, I don't think we have looked back after that. Swami has inspired us to such an extent that we would want to be there. And till the end of our life, my prayer is that Swami should give us the strength to continue his work.
Very nice. Since you serve economically backward area and most of the parents are really low income earners, do you charge a fee? What is the fee structure like?
We charge a very nominal fee. We are providing them a lot of facilities, like our education is e-education. We have the Educom smart classes because the children are from a rural area. They have difficulty in grasping the science concepts. So we thought that once we provide them an audio-visual education, it will be easy for them.
So smart boards and everything.
Yes, digi boards are there in all the classes. And all our teaching is through the visual, audio-visual teaching is going on in our school. Apart from that, because of rural background, the children are also finding it difficult to communicate in English. So we have the campus English program. But we are not charging the children for all this. We just charge a nominal fee. And there are some students who still can't afford the fee. So we look out for sponsorships and we sponsor the children who are coming from very backward community. There are also cases where the people want to sponsor only the talented students. They come with a tag saying that the child should have got above 80% or 85%. But there are children who are talented but may not be good in academics. So we reach out in different ways so that all the children are taken care of. So we do it that way. There are, of course, certain sponsorships for talented students. And apart from that, the main advantage in our school is we personally know the children, the background of the child. So we know that if the child is from a really very economically poor family, then it is not a necessity that the child has to get 80-85 marks. It's from an illiterate background, if a child is able to get 65-70, it is very good. So we use our discretion and we provide the scholarship to the children.
I see. Since your students are transforming with this education, which is rooted in Sai values, have you seen an extension of this impact going to the family and a transformation happening with the parents and the siblings of these students?
Yes. Here I would like to mention about one boy who had a part to do in 2008 drama. We had an opportunity to put a drama in front of Swami. Prema Vahini was a drama. And the boy who played the character of Burakatha being done in front of Swami, this boy was living in city. But the moment the parents came to know that a Sai school is there, they shifted to the village and they put the boy. The girl was still studying in a well-to-do school in Chennai. And this particular boy was very interested in all activities, but he was not very good at it. When he performed in front of Bhagwan, Swami looked at him continuously during the drama. His gaze was on this particular boy. And that was a turning point in his life. He was very much into watching the video games, playing a lot and having junk food and other things which the parents were a little worried. The moment he went back, he took to playing harmonium and keyboard, and now he is recognized as one of the best instrumental players in Chennai. And his sister got inspired. She was studying in a very good school and she said, no, I want to move on to Baba's school. And she also came and joined the school and she is also there. And parents who were not so much aware of Bhagwan, they became very much inspired and they taken up a lot of activities. They are sponsoring another child so that they get an opportunity to read in our school.
Mm-hmm.
There are many instances like this where the parents are illiterates or there is another girl I would like to mention. She is born to a tailor and the parents are illiterates, but this girl has got a very good aptitude for music.
Mm-hmm.
And both of them did not realize that. They wanted to put her in a government school. So that time we told the parents that she has got a very good talent in music. We sponsored her education and now she's continuing in our school and she's outstanding in music. So all this is Bhagwan's grace.
What does she play? Vocalist?
She's a singer. She's a vocalist and she sings very well. She started learning Carnatic music, classical music, and she's doing very well. And it is purely Bhagwan's grace because there is no background. There's no music background. The parents nor the child know that she has the capacity. It is just Swami's grace. Just as a prism, just as a prism would reflect the light, no, into the seven hues, like that Bhagwan's grace is shining through this girl and she is really in very good form, doing so well in studies as well as music.
And your school has music lessons, obviously.
Oh yeah, we have music, Carnatic music, we have Bharatanatyam and we have Vedam classes going on. We have keyboard, dolki, yoga. We have all these classes, but everything has to be done within the school curriculum because children cannot go out and learn.
This is the day school, isn't it?
Yes.
So what are your hours because you got so much packed into a day school?
Yeah, the school begins at 9:10 and it gets over around 3:40. But the students who have an aptitude, who are interested in all these activities, they have to come little early, half an hour early or stay back for half an hour. And some activities are gelled within the school time itself. We take 5 minutes from each hour and we allocate 20 minutes in the morning and 20 minutes in the afternoon for the Bhagavad Gita chanting and Vedam. Vedam classes go on during the school hours. Of course, for Bharatanatyam, for Dolki and for music classes, the students have to come half an hour earlier.
Okay.
So that once they come to school, they learn everything and they go back. In city, it is really very tough for the parents because they have to take the children from one point to another, take them to the classes, bring them back. But in a village, that much of awareness is not there for the parents. So we thought if the child is interested, when he comes to school, everything should be provided. By the time they go back, they should be well equipped with all the things that are needed for them. They should have hobbies, they should have a passion, they should learn, they should be creative.
Mm-hmm.
So this is what we thought and we gel everything within the school curriculum. It must be really interesting to note that though the school is located in a village, the children have been performing excellently well in the field of music and they have won many state level awards and even national level awards.
Mm-hmm.
One of the child who is in the team has won a national award. She came national second.
That's a big thing.
She took part in a devotional music singing competition. So we were going all the way to Delhi. We thought that we are going to sing Swami's song. So whatever it is, it has to be Swami's name that we are going to carry with us. So this girl sang this particular song and she sang the Telugu song, the Swami song, Dayaku Premaku Roopu Dalchina Devama, and she won national second. And there were preliminary events where she was judged by 9 eminent people in the music field, in which she came first. She was chosen by the state level and then she had to compete with students who won in all the states, and there were competitions in the north, south, east, west zone, and from that there were 21 students who were shortlisted, and among that 3 students stood national first, second and third, and this particular girl got second prize. And there's another girl who has joined recently about whom I was saying. She's born to a tailor and when she was reciting Bhagavad Gita, I could see that her voice was very unique. And that is how I told her parents and convinced them that she should learn music. So they put her in classes. But even before she could start learning music formally, I thought she has a very good voice and I trained her in some classical as well as bhajan competitions. And in a classical competition, she's won first prize for the senior category.
Mm-hmm.
She belongs to the junior level and she has won prizes in the senior category. And she has also taken part in a national level patriotic singing competition in which our team has got the first prize in the national level, and people were really stunned because we are a team from Tamil Nadu and we won the prize for singing a Hindi song.
Oh, that's very impressive.
So they mentioned
national integration
national integration songs in Hindi. Uh-huh. So the people out there were very happy to give it out because they said the team from Tamil Nadu is doing so well in Hindi and we are very happy and proud to hand over the prize to them. So this is all Swami's work.
And their music training is only what they receive at your school.
Yes. They don't have a background and they do not have a training in Carnatic music or anything.
To music lessons elsewhere.
No, they do not have. They do not have opportunity to go and learn because it is very remote.
Yes.
They have to travel for nearly 2 hours even if they have to meet any other guru, Carnatic guru. So everything is done in the school and it is purely Swami's grace that they are able to shine so well. People are wondering, how come from an area which is so far away from the city, which is the hub of Carnatic music, there are children who are born in this music family and they are not able to do, whereas the children from such a rural area are shining and performing so well. And we tell them, and they ask us also, how is it that it is possible? Then we really feel proud to say that it is a Sai school and it is Bhagwan's grace that these children are shining so well.
Now your student composition, the student body is multicultural, it's not... Or rather, should I say, you have people from different faiths, multi-faith.
Yes.
You have Hindus, you have Muslims.
Yes.
And Christians. Do you find any resistance in groups that are non-Hindu when it comes to Bhagwan's teachings?
No, not at all. I would like to mention, in fact, we have our annual day. We do not have an auditorium. There is a very big university near our school. It is the Abdul Rahman University, Crescent Engineering College, otherwise it is called. You can understand that it is a Muslim university.
Mm-hmm.
And for our annual day, the correspondent of the college, he said that I want to come and attend your annual day. Please invite me because I've heard a lot about the work you both are doing. And there are many people from that institution, the kids' parents who are teaching there, the staff, they're all there in our school. They know because we do not say, what is Swami's message? He has said that I have come here to make you a better Christian, a better Muslim. So this is what we have been telling them. They all know that by joining our school, they don't have to become a Sai devotee. They just have to become a better human being.
That's right.
So that message has reached out in these 25 years. This is our 25th year. So this has gone very deep rooted in the minds of all the parents and the children. So for every festival that we celebrate, everybody takes part. Recently we had the Guru Purnima celebrations. We had the Christian and Muslim children coming and telling about the significance of Guru Purnima. So this problem has never been there with us because we never forced anything. It came naturally to them and they understood what Swami's message was really. So I don't think there was any problem that way.
Well, it's wonderful to know that you and your sister and your staff are serving as beacons of Swami's light in that community in Uteri. Clearly, you pursue your mission with the real passion to serve Bhagwan. How are you coping with the fact that he's no longer in the form? Has that impacted you?
Personally, when I came to Puttaparthi, actually I feel it more. Because whenever we used to come to Parthi, we used to see Swami in Kulwanth Hall. We used to think that Swami is blessing us and sending us back. But frankly, in school we do not feel. Because in school we feel that Swami is there.
The energy is always there.
It is there. The vibration is always there. When we look at the children singing with so much of devotion to Bhagwan, we know that Swami is really present in the school, in the bhajan sessions, in the morning prayer. And every time a child responds with so much of happiness when we do something, I know Swami is there. It is Bhagwan who is carrying out this work through us. And it's not possible for just two girls to carry on this mission on such a large scale. We have nearly 55 people working under us and it is Swami who is working through us. The way the whole school is blossoming up, the way the children are growing in every aspect and the way the teachers work as if it's their own school, it is their own family. Actually, this particular academic year when we began, both my sister and me could not be there. We had to go to Bangalore for an urgent work. All the teachers stayed back till 6 o'clock the previous day. They saw to it that every arrangement was done for the reopening. They called us and told, ma'am, everything is ready.
Mm-hmm.
So the feeling that it is their school has permeated into the teachers as well as into the students. So this is Bhagwan's work.
So the success that you've had as an administrator and an educator to create this team spirit with your staff, to what extent do you think it is a result of your education in the Sai institution or in a Sai university?
I think in Satya Sai Institute we learned that success is not in being in the forefront but in being in the group. I would just like to narrate one incident. When we were doing a program for the sports meet, that was a marching, that was a program that was done. But the teachers felt that maybe a few of us could do some daring events because March Past could be a little normal event. So we were a group of 10 of us who had to perform. And during that time, the facility was not so good and our principal gave us just a week's time to prepare for the program. And when we came to Puttaparthi, the structure had not been very correctly fixed. But we as a group stuck together. We said that we are not going to tell anybody about this. We will carry on with the program and we will do it. So we completed the program and I happened to be this girl who had to finish off the program. So the moment we did it, Swami raised both his hands and gave Abhyastha. And all of us were little not feeling very good because the March Past had not come out so well. So that evening Swami came and he said, "Who are the girls who did the swing item? Go to the ground," he said. Then we all went. Then Swami materialized Vibhuti and he said, "All of you did it together and you did it so well." So Swami was happy that we as a group stuck together. So he made it very clear to us that as individual, the success is not so great. If as a team you're able to achieve, that is what is there. And he said, "Where there is unity, there is purity. And where there is purity, there is divinity." And Swami showed himself and he gave us Vibhuti and he said, "Give it to all." So this message was there in our minds. So even in the school, we may be the principal or the vice principal, that post is only the thing. If anything has to be done, we have to be the first ones to do it. Then automatically the teachers also would follow. This we have learned from Swami only. Swami would do it, no? Any work has to be done, he would do it first. So this example, I think that is the best way to lead, by taking the first step. So this is a lesson which has gone into our minds, and that is how this feeling of family has set in our school.
Very nice. Basumati, your role as an educator to take the Sai education forward becomes even more important now because Bhagwan is no longer in the form and those whom he has chosen to be his instruments have to carry on the mission. In light of this new reality, what do you think, what is your foremost priority?
Actually, I was fortunate to attend the diploma course on Educare, the last one which was conducted in Kodai. And it was during that time that Swami's Mahasamadhi happened. So we as a group of principals who were there attending the course, it was a reality that dawned on us, the question that you have asked me, that from now on the focus will be on every Sai school and on every Sai student who is going to step into the society bearing Swami's name. So it becomes all the more imperative that we look within and we project ourselves in the light of Swami's message. So our first priority is to do the task at hand perfectly. So we have equipped ourselves to provide education, and not merely education, but as Bhagwan has put it, educare. So giving them a value-based education is our foremost priority. And to reach out to more number of students and to reach out to them in an effective way. So we are training our teachers also in this line to give them the foundation about Sai's education, to give them the mission which Swami has taken up, so that they also in their own small way do it. The children have come to Parthi, so our next task is to bring the teachers and to show them Puttaparthi and also throw more light on Swami's teachings and train them in this line.
How do you, if I asked you to sum up, how do you relate to Bhagwan Baba? Who is he for you?
At a personal level, Swami is the one who is closest to me because I could tell everything to Bhagwan. But he has been a role model to me. Because every act that Bhagwan did, maybe as a student I didn't realize, as the days are going by and as I'm growing in my life and in my experience, I realize that right from his walk, from his talk, from the way Bhagwan conducted himself, it is a lesson for all of us to learn. If at all we could imbibe and practice one or two things that Bhagwan did. So any time we are at crossroads, we do not know what to prioritize, how to act. We both of us sit and we think what Bhagwan would have done at that time, what guidance he would have given us. So that is the way Swami is touching us.
Well, thank you very much for sharing your thoughts with us, and I'm sure our listeners will enjoy this very much. Sai Ram.
Great opportunity for our sister. Sai Ram.
Sai Ram, dear listeners, we hope you enjoyed today's episode of Fleeting Moments, Lasting Memories. Please send us your feedback. As always, you can reach us at listener@radiosai.org. Thank you for joining us. And Sai Ram from Prashanti Nilayam.
कृष्णाय वासुदेवाय हरये परमात्मने प्रणदत्वे शनाशाय श्रीगोविन्दाय नमो नमः
परतीश्वरा साई प्रेम